podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system, Diogis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Can I get a woot woot? I'm Lacey Green, and I'm a super trainer at Body. That's BODI.com. And you know what's missing from the entire fitness industry? A program for beginners only. Not anymore. I've created a program called For Beginners Only, and it is for everybody and everybody. It's a 3-week program only on Body, the world's first health esteem platform. That means it's a place for you to work on loving who you are right now as you work on who you are becoming. I'll ease you into exercise with low-impact cardio, strength, core, and mobility workouts that will help you feel great as soon as you get started. I'll help you build your foundation and show you how simple it can be to make a change just by showing up. It's for beginners only because I want you to know you can do it, and I want you to get results. Let's find the joy and drop the judgment. And whoop, whoop! Now you can try For Beginners Only with your free trial of Body. So there's no reason not to get started. Go to body.com today. That's body with an I.com.
It is Tour Live. It is Friday. It is from Liverpool. We have got Sean Rogers. We've got Siobhan Began. And we've got Cam Rimmer with us as well. A pleasure to have all three joining us for this live extravaganza on this Friday afternoon. Coming up, we've got more than just that, obviously, because it is Tour Live. If you are listening to and enjoying this as a podcast, we have got for ourselves. How are you, Siobhan, and yourself? You well?
Don't be asking me why the fire alarm's going off.
Emma Sanders.
That was a tactical muse.
Emma Sanders on to talk to us about LFC Women, who've got a couple of massive games coming up. She's talking about them and the transfers that Liverpool have had in and out. Lee Pennington with John Gibbons from the mental health charity Open Door in Birkenhead. That is to come. We're obviously going to look ahead to Wolves. But we'll start off on contract rumours, not transfers. There was none of that this week. Liverpool saw fit to ensure that that was the case. New contract rumours is the stuff, the bits and pieces I want to get into, because it feels as though there's a live conversation, Sean Rogers, about whether or not Liverpool should be thinking about offering Firmino a new deal, given the fact that they've offered a fair few lads who were in their late 20s or even in their early 30s new contracts recently. There is talk that Firmino may well be lined up for one as well. Now, obviously, we don't know the detail of the contract or anything like that, but in principle, do you think Liverpool should be looking at Roberto Firmino and offer him a new deal?
Ooh, I mean, me and Siobhan have already tried to hijack the show enough, so I'm surprised you've come to me first.
Cam's done nothing wrong.
I thought that was definitely going to be to save the show, go to Cam first. It's not my money, ultimately. So, you know, if you're playing Football Manager on this one, the negatives. Look, he's getting more and more muscular injuries. Of all the players we've had, your Gini Wijnaldums, your Hendersons, your Fabinho, he really is the 160,000-mile taxi driver second-hand car, isn't he, Bobby, when it comes to it? And so you look at it, and he's on decent dough at the moment, and we've got a load of forwards that will be ahead of him in the pecking order. So there'll be a load of people saying, don't give him the contract. And anyone who's sort of anti the giving of the contracts to some of the older lads, this will probably give them more evidence to go into that campaign, if you will. On the other hand, I mean, if Liverpool can ever sort out the medical department, that's probably a show in itself. But if they could, then you would think that Firmino could be managed in the right way. And he's not someone who ever was blessed with pace. He did used to be able to just about get away from people over a very short distance, and his pressing and things like that. You obviously need to be sharp. But all things being well, and it's not our money at the end of the day. If there weren't knock-on consequences of any negativity, then I don't see the issue with keeping him, because fantastic around the training ground, excellent in training, bordering on perfect in terms of his execution of things, bring the young players in, set the standards, and a bit like your Minamino and Origi's, he could play in the cup games, come off the bench and help us. I think he could probably do a job in certain midfield roles as well. So for me personally, I would love to see him stay for another couple of years. You wouldn't want to see Liverpool have the continued injury problems they've got.
That feels pretty permanent. Cam, would you like to see Roberto Firmino be given a new contract?
If he's going to be a fifth or sixth choice striker, playing the fifth or sixth choice amount of minutes sort of thing, I'd be happy with. Like, I think at the start of the season, that was probably the view. But as the season's gone on with injuries and stuff, he's probably played a bit more, and that's where it ended up being. It started to show a bit where he just isn't the same player anymore. Yeah, he has scored a few goals and stuff, and he's hasn't been as bad. But I don't know. I just think eventually we're going to end up stockpiling this, these like old sort of players. And he's, don't get me wrong, he's been a brilliant servant. But if we can guarantee injuries elsewhere, that, you know, that doesn't know injuries elsewhere, like on the forward line, I'd be happy to keep him. But if we go into another season next season and there's injury crisis, which tends to happen a lot with us, it's much harder because you're trying to demand a lot more from him. So
it's interesting that you're not committing in either direction there, I would say, Cam.
It's a hard one because you just don't know what's going to happen with the team in terms of in terms of injuries and stuff. Like, yeah, he'd be good to keep around, just to keep around, though. I think he'd be good for experience. But I wouldn't want to be going into next season and it ends up being he's one of the first choices, because, you know, we need to start looking at younger, more fresher players now. So, you know, in hindsight, it would be good to keep him as long as there's no other injuries. So I'll stick my neck out and I'll say yeah on the hope that we don't have another injury-ridden season.
The Gakpo signing, Siobhan, I felt there was a situation where I thought, well, that'll be the end of Firmino. And then about a day later, it was, oh, no, Liverpool are in talks. And that, this week it's come out again that Liverpool are in talks. I'm mildly surprised by that. Not in a, you know, I'm a little agnostic on it as well, like everyone else. I can go either way. But I am surprised that he is still thought of in this context. What do you think happens here with Firmino? What would you like to see Liverpool do?
I really hate it when a signing is seen as like a, you know, a dependent on someone in the squad either being or not being. Like, I know that is like the natural kind of succession planning, but that worries me. And when Gakpo came in, all I thought was, oh, right, Diaz, the season's over or something like that. But with Bobby Firmino, not to repeat what the lads have said, but if he's on lower money, because I think like that pecking order can't just be like a verbal pecking order. It's got to be a players treated in accordance with that pecking order, as you know, like in terms of the reward they get and the minutes they play. It entirely hinges on what the plan is for him, what the expectation of him is, and what the kind of narrative is around him. Because if it turns into, I think this season, what we fell into, particularly earlier in the season, was, oh, he's turned out to be handier than we thought he'd be. And when we're playing badly, he's getting us out of a few holes. And we definitely can't have that again, because you don't want to be in that situation in the first place. But you also don't want to be relying on someone who is, you know, 5 years older than their peak, now 4 years older than their peak, to be doing that for you. So I think, like, I don't see the downside in it if it's handled in a proper, you know, you are now, as Cam said, fifth or sixth choice, and you will play these games. And if we're, you know, toiling for a 85th minute winner, we might bring you on to see if it makes an impact, but no more, no less. I'm fairly laissez-faire about it, as long as that's it.
Just on it, Siobhan, do you think he suffers a little bit because in our minds at the minute there have been the contract extensions recently? You know, you've got, and go, it extends all the way through to Milner, who's 37, you know. It feels like he's, I think we're all sort of the view, well, there's only so much sort of how many of these you can carry at any sort of given time. Do you think that's going to impact on the way in which we perceive it more than anything else?
Yeah, but I think it's really important that you don't group every player over 32 who's kind of had their day in the same category, because a Milner, the job he's asked to do is so different to the job that you think you'd hope that Bobby would be asked to do. You're never going to be asking Firmino to come on and play right back, or, you know, to do something that is like a younger man's job. And I think that he's got to, as long as it's not a younger man's job he's being asked to do. But I do think that it suffers because it is tempting, and it is kind of easy to just lump everyone in one category in that sense.
All right, Kimchi Strider in the Kimchi Strider in the comments, refused to believe that was what they were christened. Aragorn's lad. Says that he or she would renew Bobby and Milner if they're okay with quite significant pay cuts. And that's you know, being the tone here elsewhere, you know, Siobhan saying that, Sean. And that's one of the things that there's talk of, you know, either performance related or there being pay cuts. I think that's something that the sort of the squad could do with, is, you know, knowing that that's happened. I think Milner's already had a very substantial pay cut in order to stay one more season this time out. I am intrigued with how that ends up. I think the substantial pay cut thing is a thing that I think could happen. And for me, that therefore, it almost adds to the idea that Firmino's happy with that. It suggests he's very happy with Liverpool and what he gets to do there.
Yeah, what, Neil, what's your view? Like, how do you feel about Firmino renewing a contract?
I think it's massively on whether or not I and other people are right that he's tweaking the shape to get four attackers on the pitch. Like, I think if he's playing three up front and he sees Gakpo as one of those as a forward, then he ends up in a situation where I view Elliot more of a forward, certainly in the next sort of 18 months for us now again. So you end up in a situation where, well, where is he in the pecking order with Carvalho possibly around, and obviously Doak, and we'd like to think Gordon. So I think if that's the case, if we're playing three from that the list of the big five and then these other guys, then I think it becomes difficult to sort of see how Firmino gets on the pitch other than in crisis mode or just solely the domestic cups. Like, I'm almost, you're not far away from there making an argument that he's not making benches, would be my point. He's not far, if everyone in attack's close to fit, you're not far away from him not making benches or him being put on the bench as a bit of a, well, he knows what we're about and all this, but maybe then someone else who you'd like to see on a bench isn't on a bench. If we're playing four forwards or four people who we could classify as forwards, which could include Gakpo, Diaz, Firmino, and then maybe a Doak at times getting dropped in and around, plus the obvious or the big hitter lads, then I think you're in a situation where you can say, well, you keep him, because we're not just remoulding the squad in terms of young in and old out. We're remoulding the squad in terms of number of people we want to identify as playing in that sort of position. And we need a certain number of them. And we've got a number of those ins in, but we keep this one. And then there's one or two others out. And maybe you need one or two fewer in other areas because you're committing to four forwards every week.
Yeah, there's a wider conversation to be had about whether Liverpool should be cashing in on people. Almost Bob Paisley-esque, I guess, in terms of letting the legs go on someone else's watch. But that's a wider context debate about sort of whether you do that player by player or whether that's more of a philosophy when things are going well and kind of just keeping people together.
Whether or not you might have done that, Sean, if there hadn't been a global pandemic.
Well, exactly. And there's loads of other factors with that. But with Bobby, the horse has bolted, hasn't it? Like, the chance to cash in on him has gone. So I always think Ferguson would definitely keep someone like Bobby Firmino around, in my view, because you got, like, you're Brian McClare's one for the kids and people like that who know what it's like. I don't think you can underestimate what it's like having people around who have lived what it's like to win stuff at your club against the rivals that you're competing with and know what it's like in their moments that are still excellent on and off the training ground. Adam Lallana's a loss to Liverpool that, but maybe not so much on a Saturday afternoon, but Liverpool's more than just what happens on a Saturday afternoon. So assuming it doesn't, Firmino in isolation doesn't have knock-on consequences wage-wise, I would like to see him stay. But I do think for the last year, he's just kept getting muscle injuries, which suggests we've been forced to use him because of the other injury problems when we're maybe overusing him, but also we're not getting him quite right. And you'd have thought, if we'd have asked everyone years ago, other than the wear and tear that we've put on him, you would think Bobby's style of play, not quite Teddy Sheringham, but you'd think that he could mould his game a little bit to maybe be a bit more of a midfielder, or the thing you've been discussing recently, Neil, which I agree with completely, that maybe Klopp's looking at a weird 4-4-2 where actually the two strikers are more Firmino, Gakpo, Jota types, and the wingers are actually the highest ones with loads of pace. And if that is something he's moulding towards, then he really does need to keep Bobby. Because then you are light on numbers in them two roles.
There we are. Just quick, there's the others knocking around. Chamberlain, Keiter, and Milner camp. Do you think you envisage a situation where either of those two will be, any of those three will be sustained as Liverpool players going into next season? Or do you think that those ships are very much sailing?
I don't know. We've been having these conversations for like the last 2 years where you think the ship sails and then it doesn't. It all depends, obviously, what business we do. I mean, I'd be very shocked if they're the same midfielders we have next year and there's not one or two reinforcements. Then, obviously, a few of them have got to go. But might Milner get, like, another year sort of thing? And then, but then you could make an argument for the others. I think the dead set out of them all is Chamberlain. think he'll be the one who's probably going to be going. And then, but then Keita as well, he seems to have came back into the team a bit. But I'm not too sure. It all depends what business we do, what players we bring in. Like, you know, if we end up bringing a Bellingham, that means he'll have to, like, you know, all of the homegrown rules and stuff and all that comes into consideration. So there's lots more that goes into it instead of just saying, well, he's coming in, he's going to go. But stick me neck out and I'll say, I reckon we'll keep one of them. Just not sure which one.
Siobhan, do you think we'll keep one of them?
Yes, but I wouldn't mind that not being the case. I think for his own sake and his own kind of well-being, Oxlade-Chamberlain's Rose's run, definitely. Keita, I don't think they like him enough to play him all the time, which is mad. It's like he's really like offended someone like on a night out or something. He said something really bad and no one can quite forgive him for it. And Milner, I think like everyone will always think, oh, we can still do a job, we can do another year, but I think like I think the line has to be drawn somewhere. The bleep test, and yes, my smoke alarm, speaking of bleep tests, that is mine. I saw it come up on the bottom before, but the bleep test is not enough to keep him around for another year. Like, I think like end on a semi, not low.
Sean, do you think any of the three of them will be asked to hang on? I think Firmino will be, and I think that the other three ultimately won't be. Although I think they'll take Milner until the last hour of the last day, of the last week of his contract before they make a final decision.
I completely agree. I mean, one of the things that doesn't get touched on a lot, if you're looking at this from an FSG financial point of view, Liverpool spend a lot of money on their midfielders. I reckon there's at least six or seven of them on 150 plus. And when you add that up over the course of a year, Liverpool are spending pretty big sums on the midfield squad, and that's before you start adding in some of the youngsters and other people that could play there. So when people talk about bringing in midfielders and you think, well, bring another three in, two of which you could be on 200, 250 grand a year, you start crunching them numbers, you've got to get rid of some off that wage bill. And I would say that if you look at Keita, even Milner on a reduced deal, Milner, Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain is 300-400 grand a week going off that, which frees up that space in the wage bill. I know it's a bit geeky, but our wage to turnover percentage is not too bad. But if you wanted it to go in one direction, it needs to come down a little bit. So not so much the transfer fees. I certainly think a midfield to bring a few in, you've got to let a few go, and therefore you have to let them three go.
Okay, excellent stuff. Someone's mentioned the comments about Mel Reddy's piece in Sky Sports. Very much worth reading. For me, the top line is the top line. The concerning thing may or may not be departmental around Liverpool, but the person who was in charge of it all, who oversaw it all, Mike Gordon, has moved away from that side of things. And I think that that's where a lot of the sort of troubles that Mel speaks to lie to a substantial degree. But do check that out. It is excellent stuff as ever from Mel. It's good to see that she's going from strength to strength, always in a frankly tremendous pair of boots. This has been Tour Live so far, and there is more of it to come. If you listen to this as a podcast, you're about to get the wonderful Emma Sanders, also almost certainly beautifully debuted, and Lee Pennington. Emma talking to me about LFC Women, Lee about the mental health charity Open Door in Birkenhead. But we're going to loop around, so you'll be back with us in a second or two. If it is just on YouTube, if it's a podcast, you'll be back with us in a fair few minutes' time, enjoying the company of those people when we're going to talk about Wolverhampton Wanderers. Always good to partner, well, with lots of people, but especially in this instance with NordVPN. We've been working with NordVPN around letting you know what they're up to for the last few months now. Been a pleasure to do so. And as part of all of that, I just want to be really, really clear that you can enjoy the benefits of NordVPN all the time. It's easy to use. You can connect with one click, and you can enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. 5,400 servers in 60 countries. Find a server near you. In order to grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/wrap, W-R-A-P, to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus a bonus gift. It is risk-free with the 30-day money-back guarantee, John. We've been working with them for some time now, and we've been using them. I mean, they are convenient about these things. They say, give this to the people and let them let them have a go, and we've taken the advantage of that.
Yeah, I've used it in a few different ways. One of them, people probably use VPNs mostly and talk about it mostly to be able to access content in different countries where maybe you're prohibited in some ways from doing so. So you can change your location really easily with the click of the button and access maybe a 3 o'clock football game that isn't available sort of in your country, but also loads of dramas and stuff like that, things that are on American TV that haven't made it over here yet.
Or vice versa,
and stuff like that. Yeah, and I know a lot of the stuff that's been out on here that we've talked about on shows, people seem to keen, and this is a way around it. I will also say, I mentioned it briefly last time, but the internet security is really top on it as well. So I know a lot of people, you know, when they go to say airports or things like that, are always a bit worried with that thing that flashes up going, are you sure you want to use the internet here? And you're like, am I? I mean, I was, but now all of a sudden
I couldn't be less sure.
Well, yeah, I get a couple of simple clicks on your VPN and it makes everything much more secure. And I'm told, I'm reliably informed, doesn't affect your speed as much as others. I've not tested them all, I'll be honest with you.
I wouldn't have expected you to. nor would Nord. You know, you're a busy man, you've got a lot on.
But Nord, basically, Nord haven't let me down in any other aspect of what they've done. So I believe them when they say that. It's one of the fastest around.
Absolutely, yes. So get on the public Wi-Fi in a variety of different places, very much secure via...
Maybe I could do it like a shit Daz Ultra test. You know, with whites.
Oh, God. Over and over again, different
Santa
places.
Film with me. Go on. Yeah. Quick. Not as quick, though.
Et cetera, et cetera.
It's not great content, is it?
I mean, I like the fact that you held the phone up there when you did that. You held the phone up. Was it like Sam's going to do the moving cam off it? Ooh, zoom. Yeah, so that is NordVPN. We are really, really pleased to work with them. It is very, very useful indeed in all the ways that John sort of mentioned there. And there are others as well, other benefits around it all. So you can find a number of ways to get on board with the NordVPN plan. It is in there if you're a tech person, a very tech person, it's very much worth using. Access from anywhere, from the streaming side of things as well. Also, it's very useful, as we've said there, around travel and all the different ways you can ensure that you've got that security all the way through. And it helps on public Wi-Fi, it helps block malware-ridden websites as well, it helps you skip annoying ads, everything that you need. So if you do want to sign up for NordVPN, and it just might be worth sort of pointing out, you know, we're talking on this podcast about a game at Molyneux. You want to grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/wrap to get the huge discount. It is risk-free. There is a gift, 30-day money-back guarantee, and Molyneux. Joined by Emma Sanders to have a chat about just the significance of these back-to-back home games for Liverpool women on Sunday at 2 p.m. Liverpool women are up against Reading, and then the following Sunday also at 2 p.m. both at Prenton Park, at home. Liverpool women are up against Leicester City. Reading currently sit 1 point behind Liverpool, albeit having played two games more. And Leicester are 5 points behind, only won one game all season, but it was the last one, and they've done some transfer business in January, which we'll talk to Emma about now as well. So they currently sit on 3 points. Only the first win of the season was that win. Liverpool women sit on 8 points from 10 games. And my point here, Emma, is that these two home games, they're not quite season-defining in that if Liverpool lost both of them, it wouldn't mean the end of anything. But if they win both of them, it almost certainly guarantees they're playing WSL football next season.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to put it. I do think they are season-defining for that reason, because it literally could make them safe by the end of February. Yeah, two wins in both of those games, and I think that's pretty much job done there. Obviously, there's still a lot more games to play in the league, but I say that with the caveat of, obviously, it is only a 12-team league, so there actually aren't that many games to play. They've already played 10 of them, so they're halfway through, pretty much. So if they were to win those two games, then yeah, that would be an unbelievable boost, I think, in terms of going into the last sort of second half of the season. But I also think it's important to note that Liverpool, in the running towards the end of the season as well, they are playing a lot of teams sort of around the kind of the mid-table mark as well. So out of those battling in the relegation zone, I would say that Liverpool have probably got the more favourable fixtures. We've seen them play, you know, all of the kind of the big dogs, really, sort of around October, November time. So actually, if they were to come away with 6 points against the two relegation teams nearest to them, then absolutely it would put them in a massively strong position.
It's been interesting sort of seeing what they've done in January. I'll talk about what Leicester have done first, because it feels like from the outside looking in as though Leicester have made their big play.
They've brought in a lot of footballers. They've clearly had a plan. They've switched managers, obviously, in the first part of the season, which is one of the things you do when you lose nine consecutive games. So Leicester, the second one of these two, Reading being the first, the Leicester game will not be as straightforward as when it was originally meant to be played. Liverpool were meant to play Leicester in the first half of the season when Leicester were in the slap bang at the worst part of the very awful run. It got postponed because of the ground. Liverpool are going to get a tougher Leicester side now than they would have got then.
Yeah, and I think that would be the most disappointing thing from Matt Beard's point of view is that they are playing the Leicester team now post-transfer window as opposed to pre, as you say, because of that that game being rearranged. And I know that's something that other managers across the league, the Arsenal manager has been really, really strong on that, that there has to be something in place to stop these postponements coming after transfer windows because it is a completely different game now. As you say, Leicester have got a new manager, very, very experienced manager, former Everton boss, who's also been sort of in that relegation battle before. He was very successful in bringing Everton out of that. He also had that with Bristol City. So I do think Leicester are a completely different team now. They got their first win under their belt against Brighton, who were obviously another team in that relegation battle in January. That came after the new manager came in. And then obviously they brought in all of these really, really key players. I think Ruby Mace is a young sort of defensive midfielder, number six, that they brought in on loan from Manchester City. And she is real, real top quality. So those types of players coming in for Leicester, I think, will make a massive, massive difference. So Liverpool need to try and, yeah, kind of just get at them early. You have to remember that obviously because they have brought in lots of new players, that perhaps they haven't had enough time to really gel and get to know each other. And that's probably the only positive. But it's
going to be really good.
Yeah.
They found a way to beat Brighton 3-0. We're also down there as well, it is worth saying. It's not as though that's remarkably unlikely. Liverpool have also done a little bit of business, Emma. It looks like some of it is for the future and some of it is for the now. The thing that looks most obviously for the now is obviously getting Natasha Dowie in on loan. She's 34 now. That feels as though that's Liverpool being aware of the fact that they can't just ask Katie Stengel to go over and over again in the second half of the season. There's other signings have been made as well, one or two to be excited about.
Yeah, I really like the look of Fuka Nagano, who's the Japanese midfielder who's come in. She's very creative, very technical. We've already seen in her first two games what she can do on the ball. I think she will add a little bit more in that kind of final third, which Liverpool have massively been missing. And as you say, Natasha Dowie was the big one, brought in very, very late on deadline day. I understand that she had a medical the day before, but it was still very much up in the air until, sort of a few hours ready to go until the 5 p.m. deadline on the final day. So that was really, really key in bringing in another attacker, but with a massive caveat, obviously, that she is obviously on loan and therefore cannot play against Reading in the first of those kind of vital relegation six-pointers. So it will just be pretty much Katie Stengel and then obviously the likes of Yana Daniels and Mel Lawley, who we have seen playing throughout the season. So that will be still a challenge for Liverpool, that they haven't really got many attacking options against Reading in that first game. But obviously to have Natasha Dowie as a second option against Leicester, I think, is really, really important. So that was vital work from Liverpool done on the final day of the transfer window.
They drew last weekend 3-2 against Sam Kerr's Chelsea. Given the fact that she bangs a hat-trick over the course of the game, we can say that Holland and Bonner both managed to get on the score sheet for Liverpool. It was a strong side picked by Matt Beard for that one. It was a strong side picked by Emma Hayes as well. It is worth sort of pointing that out, isn't it? And 3-2, you know, whilst obviously it's worth saying that, you know, on balance in there, Chelsea do have the better of the game, more possession, more shots on target, all the bits and pieces you would expect. That Liverpool were able to go to Chelsea, get a couple of goals is no bad thing, and it does suggest that there is still a lot about this side. It is reasonable to expect them to stay up. For me, Emma, the reason why I'd love to see them get 6 points from this too is it actually means they can just look upwards for the rest of the campaign, because it's about building what comes next, isn't it, for Liverpool women as much as anything else. That's why it would be terrible to see them almost caught in a relegation battle, even if they got out of it in the end. I think it's so important, isn't it, to the rest of the league, Liverpool look upwardly mobile so that they can continue to be upwardly mobile going into next season.
Yeah, I think that's it. And also, when you're in a relegation battle and you've got these other teams around you, you can't help but unconsciously look at them and sort of think about what they're doing. Certainly, you know, around the transfer window, it's quite interesting because you could tell that other managers from opposition teams were looking in at those clubs and thinking, okay, who are they buying, and almost reacting to their work as opposed to concentrating on their club. And I think that's really important when you're in a situation like that. So if Liverpool can get those 6 points, put a bit of breathing space, then as you say, they can look up rather than down, and therefore they can actually focus on what they need to do, which is put themselves in a strong position in the league, so that they're, you know, first of all, staying there. They want to be in the WSL, but second of all, putting themselves in the shop window in the summer so they can attract the extra type of quality that they do need to progress next season in the WSL. So, yeah, I think it would be a real boost. And also, you know, just mathematically, I think it will just give the players a little bit of breathing space, and therefore, you know, they're not playing with as much tension and as much pressure as we probably have seen them over the last 2 to 3 months.
Last thing before I ask you for how many points you think Liverpool women will get from those two games. Fernie's gone. She's left Liverpool to go to Bristol City by mutual consent. She's been an important part of Liverpool across the last 3 seasons. I think she scored some massive goals in the running of the last campaign. At the point, not Liverpool women were never quite rocking, but when they needed someone to step up and be counted in the second half of last season as part of the promotion push, Furness was there for them. She looked as though she could have been important for that half season in the WSL that Liverpool don't get to complete. It's an interesting Liverpool career. She's very much been there during the hard times, it's fair to say.
Yeah, I think she perhaps will look back on her time and think, oh, what if? Because as you say, that time when she was brought in just before Liverpool got relegated, she was scoring goals, she was creating chances. They picked up all of their points after signing her and Kerry Holland, it should be said, in that January transfer window. So I do still believe to this day that if COVID hadn't have obviously stopped the league from being played out in its full, then I think Liverpool would have stayed up, and a large reason for that would have been because of Rachel Furness. But I do think she's enjoyed parts of her time at the club. I think the last year has been a bit of a struggle for her. She's been struggling for game time. She is a player that absolutely loves sort of getting stuck into games and being out there and playing. So I think she has struggled playing that kind of bit part role. But she's such a professional, and I think she'll still give a lot to Bristol City in the Championship. So good luck to her.
Excellent. How many points will Liverpool women get from the next two?
I think they'll get 4.
That'll do. Thank you very much to Emma. Let's get back over.
It's John Gibbons for Tour Live, and I'm in sunny Birkenhead. I came over the water this morning to visit the fantastic Open Door Centre. Just had a little tour, seeing what they did, and I'm now joined by Lee, who's going to tell us much more. So, Lee, thanks so much for welcoming me over here today, first of all.
No, thank you for coming. Yeah. No, it's brilliant. Love everything that you do with the podcast and that, so it's great to speak to you.
Yeah, well, we bumped into each other on a beach, funny enough, in Wales, and you started telling me more about this place and what you did for a living, and I did want to come over because it is fantastic, you know, what you're doing here every day to support people, you know, not just on the Wirral, but sort of beyond as well. So if you could let people know, if you don't mind, a little bit more about what you guys do here at Open Door.
Yeah, cheers. So it's all about, like, taking mental health and support around mental health to the world in different ways, and, you know, live support if you're feeling depressed or anxious or stressed, having panic attacks or whatever, in quite unconventional spaces and places that you don't usually see these things live, with the idea being that if you create somewhere that people want to spend the time and you fill it with people who people want to spend the time with, then the chance of whatever goes on in there in, like, a therapeutic way achieving the best possible outcome is massively enhanced. So we've got the Bloom building, where that's our current, like, you know, headquarters, and you've got areas of that where there's, like, converted garden sheds for one-to-one support. You know, there's an arts center side to it where we do programming around, you know, multidisciplinary, like, community art, and we do gigs, and we've got, you know, exhibitions and, you know, events and things going on. And then different spaces that anyone really who is looking to make more progressive ways of working around mental health, spaces that anyone can call home. And, you know, we share the building for periods of time with different people. That might be people from the NHS, might be people from, you know, drug and alcohol services, might be people from CAMHS or whatever it may be. We want it to be, you know, public facing, you know, bright, wonderful, colourful space that people want to spend the time where amazing things happen.
Yeah, I don't know what people's perceptions are of centres that are focused on mental health, but I would imagine if they come here, it would be very different to maybe what they expect. when I was having a little bit of a tour before, and my head was in the clouds. I felt like it was more of a festival, you know, than it was somewhere like that. But I guess it's all about creating an environment that people feel comfortable, people feel welcome, you know, somewhere that people would want to come anyway, and then getting them in and encouraging them to open up.
Yeah, it's like people have, you know, more often than not, quite an accurate view of what mental health support looks like and where that type of thing takes place. So we're just trying to, like, one way of understanding is like positively disrupting the norm around, you know, that's what we like to think that we're doing. It's like challenging traditional thinking and just saying that, like, listen, if you're not feeling the best, like, you haven't gone mad, you know, something hasn't snapped in your head, and it's like, and you can get back to, you know, living the same, if not better than you did before. But as long as you do the right things about it, and, you know, you speak to the right people and you have the right conversations, and if you can create spaces where those conversations have got the best chance of happening in a positive way, then, you know, the battle's sort of half won as soon as you get people in the space, you know what I mean?
Yeah, in terms of who accesses your services, then, who you currently, you know, what kind of people are you currently supporting?
So for the therapeutic part of what we do, it's ages 17 to 35. If you're feeling low, stressed, depressed, anxious, having panic attacks and that. We've got a more, like, what's the word? More of like a resilience building and stress management, so a lower level of need, you know, around mental health project, which is called Colours, which is open to those from 18 plus. But we've also got services and things that, and definitely events and things going on at the Bloom Building that, like, are for all the family and all ages. So hopefully there's a little bit of something for everyone, but very much focused on young adults, you know, young people, you know, age 17 to 35 with the support side.
And if people are listening to this and, you know, what you're saying is resonating with them, so, you know, some of the words you used before about, you know, including stress and anxiety and feeling effing, getting on top with you of you and feeling like, you know, want to get back to maybe a better place, yeah, you know, what's the best way of accessing your services?
So, as I said, there's no waiting list. There's no, like, charge for any part of what we do. To register to become a member, just go on to opendoorcharity.com, and then there's just a button you click there and you can register there. There's also another button on there for anyone, you know, in the same way that I can sit here and describe the Bloom Building. If you want to see it for yourself, and, like, there's like a virtual tour that you can do where you can go in and out of the building and everything, you know, maybe even to put someone's mind at ease about what we're talking about and what to expect when they're coming in. But you can go on there and see that as well before you sign up.
We were chatting before as well about, you know, the idea of sometimes us all thinking, well, those services are for those people who live there. And, you know, I was laughing saying, you know, I drove from my house to work this morning to pick up the mic we're using, and then from work to here, and it took me longer to get to work, even though they're both in Liverpool, than it did, you know, from our office over to you. You know, it is so close, you know, from Liverpool, but not just, you know, from Liverpool for Merseyside, you know, into North Wales and stuff like that. You are easy to access on the train, you know, by car, whatever it is, and, you know, you'd encourage people if this feels like a right environment for them to come and see you.
Definitely, yeah. There's no geographical boundary to what we do. We're a totally independent charity. You know, because of where we're based, there's very much a focus, and the majority of people who come and access us are from Wirral. But, like, that doesn't mean that people living in Liverpool or any other parts of the city region aren't just as welcome to come and get involved with what we're doing. We've had people come from as far away as Leeds, you know, in the past, which, you know, it's a long way to come. But, like, you know, there's no boundary. So if you think any part of what we do speaks to you, then, you know, all are welcome.
You're doing lots here as well in terms of events and stuff. When I turned up, there was a yoga class coming on, and I know you, I mean, it's a fantastic space, and you do encourage other people to come here and use it for things that they're trying to do, especially, I guess, if it's around, you know, the idea of well-being.
Yeah, definitely. We, you know, that's in line with it not just being our space. You know, we're obviously a big part of what goes on here, but, like, we have other people who you know, use the space for, it might be the, you're a local charity and you want to do an engagement event, or, like, there's a local organisation and they've got a you know, they want to do an exhibition or something like that. But also, like, if you want a cool space to have your party.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I think we've got 5 weddings booked in this year, and there's that element to it as well. It's just there, hopefully, you know, Whittle's, you know, brightest building and a cool, great space to be. That ultimately, if you can have your wedding or your event here and all of your guests know that every penny of what they're spending on drinks and food and actually, you know, being here is 100%, that is a donation into charity, because all of the proceeds from the social enterprise part of Bloom Building get pumped directly into the frontline therapeutic support. So you know that you're achieving great things when you're spending money here.
One of the other things I talked to you a bit before was, you know, you're doing a lot of work with universities and, you know, people in full-time education, young people, it's getting more and more stressful. We've all seen statistics around, you know, young people and the pressures that they sort of feel. So you must be proud that you're able to, you know, link up with the universities in the area and support some of these younger people who are under unbelievable pressure.
That's it. Universities are like in the... We know mental health is it, you know, it's a totally different conversation in the wider public than it was, you know, in the past. Within universities, they're in the midst of an absolute mental health crisis, and we know, you know, there's all sorts of drivers for that. But if you know that's happening, then, you know, it's the responsibility of organisations like Open Door Charity to make sure that we build to meet that need. So, you know, we've got a big, you know, arm of what we do, which is about taking what we do and what is unique about what we do into the university environment, that ultimately it's going to support people who need it and, you know, address, you know, the mental health need directly, but also for students who need experience as part of their studies of actually mentoring. You know, there's a part there because it's about taking what we do. Because, you know, if we're working with a university in Manchester, or, you know, for example, we shouldn't be drafting in people from here to go and be the mentors.
Yeah.
It should be about empowering and training and, you know, build the people actually in that area themselves to support other people in that area. And it's the example I give is, like, if there's an armed forces organisation in Bristol that, you know, wants to use Bazaar, which is our core therapeutic programme, and the peer mentor and model around it, it should be another armed forces veteran in Bristol who sits in the other chair delivering the support. Mm. It's all about someone who gets your worldview. It might be that, you know, people listening to the podcast, it's like if you're sat with another person who goes to the game each week and you know, totally gets the things that interest you, and you can have that conversation around the learning, the skills and the knowledge and the information around the therapeutic side, the chance of achieving something really great is enhanced. So, like, we're dead excited about the stuff we're doing with universities. So we've got a partnership we've just done with Oxford that are in, working with places as far away as Northumbria. So it's a real, like, exciting and important part of the next stage in the Open Door journey, really.
Well, I know you've got loads much to talk about in the future and loads of exciting things that you want to be doing and you will be doing in the area. But for now, this is a fantastic centre. A nice one, and well done for everything you guys are doing here every day to support people. I'm sure, you know, the lives that you made a difference to, you know, over the years you have been doing it is countless. But yeah, just that website address again, just for people to access before we finish.
So it's www.opendoorcharity.com, and then you can find everything through there, whether it's Bazaar or Bloom Building, everything's linked in through there.
Top man, and thanks for the coffee, it was lovely.
No, it's all good. Yeah, thank you for coming, man. Yeah, appreciate it.
Excellent stuff. It is a pleasure to be able to speak about Wolverhampton Wanderers after the manager's press conference earlier today. That was 17:22, I'm saying, Andy, but you might have a different opinion. It is good to be back on Tour Live, and it's good to be back to be able to talk about yet another game at Molyneux. 17:17, says Andy. I was well out, my word. Maybe we've got different clocks. Maybe mine's been put off by Siobhan's smoke alarm. We'll see how it goes as it wears on. Another game at Molyneux, Cam. Another game against Wolverhampton Wanderers. We will end up playing them 4 times this season. They are, I would say, they're amongst the worst teams. The only way in which they're not one of the worst teams to play 4 times in a season is because they're very much this season going to be a bottom half side. But they're amongst the worst teams to play 4 times in a season because they are an exceptionally dull football club. They're an exceptionally dull side who almost certainly should escape relegation, who don't have that much going for them in the Madden stakes, with the exception of the 2 left-backs, both of whom I love, and Traore, who is an absolute head case to have to deal with.
but they find themselves being run of the mill against Liverpool at least twice more this season. What are you looking forward to in this one off the back of what the manager said today, if anything?
Ask me 5 minutes into the game tomorrow. But no, on a serious one, I think it's just one of them really weird seasons where you just don't know what's going to happen. Like, you can say you're going into it going to be exciting stuff, like what to expect. I think we should go there and get the 3 points. Like, well, we've got to get the 3 points. And even little things like, you know, we went there literally the other week in the cup, and it would be a different side. But, you know, even little things like that, like we've already won there this season. That hasn't happened much this season yet. So I think we've just got to go there and just set the precedent early. It's not one of them games where I always think the games that are at like 3 o'clock kickoffs, there's never much pressure really riding on because it's not on the television and stuff. So it's one of them we can just go there, get an early goal or two, and then just put it to bed as soon as possible. Because as you said, there's such a dull team to play. It's actually quite mad how much they've regressed over the last couple of years. When you look back to like the season we won the league, we went there and they were just so good, so in your face, like the ground was rocking. And then you go there the other week and it's like, it was literally like going to a championship team in the cup.
It was really flat, wasn't it? I've been told it was so. I didn't go. I've been every season they've been up. I've gone the league game. I'm not able to go tomorrow, but I didn't go to the cup game. And one of the things I said was, well, you go to Molineux, they'll be up for it. The atmosphere will be on fire. And everyone came back and went, Molineux was so flat. It was really flat, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's almost like they're a team who've just accepted what's going to happen eventually, whether if it's not this season, the next couple of seasons. And it's, as I said, it's really mad, like in the short space of time, how that happens. But like you said, the last few, like I know with Brighton, like in the cup last week, but there was signs there that, you know, there was little patches where you're like, well, you know, you can see what they're trying to do there. And if you can pull that off today, because then if you start looking at the run we've got, like this month we've got coming up, it's a pretty hard month and it's only getting harder. So we need to go there and get the win.
Need to go there and get the win, Siobhan. He was intriguing, I felt, in the press conference today. He's a bit of good in what we view as good injury news, but I can never work out if Jürgen says he's back in full training next week, if that means he's still 4 weeks away, whoever that player might be, because Jürgen's definition of full training and mine might be really rather different at times. I do wonder about that. But he did feel like he had some good news around players getting back. He seemed a little bit brighter. It seemed very focused on the next game press conference, to be honest with you, which I think he might also have enjoyed in there as well. And I don't think it'll be massively different for Liverpool than it was last weekend, but it feels as though we can see when it may well be different on the horizon.
I think it was really, really clear that the transfer window was shut, and that whole anxiety and that whole tension and the anticipation of the tension was just gone, because there's no further discussion, there's no further conversation to be had there. Didn't he say about Jota, though, it's back in normal training next week? That should be a little bit reassuring. He didn't say full training, he said normal training. So
normal
maybe
training.
He's just like, he's using layman's terms for us now, because we kept maybe, you know, imagining that it was something better than what it was when he said full training previously. Yeah, I thought it was quite, it was focused on the things that if you just watched that, you'd think we were not a team in any kind of turmoil at the moment, apart from obviously he went into quite a lot of detail about Fabinho's kind of drop off and need to return and need to be in control of his own return and responsible, you know, kind of own that himself and be accountable. But I think he seemed like, I felt like they got a good bit of preparation done as well. I don't know whether it's a coincidence that they put so many training pictures out this week. They must have had, sorry, there's a lot of shouting going on in the background. I think it seemed like he'd had a good week of training, a good week of prep. I think I got the sense of he knew what he was going to do this weekend. But I think closing the door on conversations around transfers has massively helped in that sense, because I think, like, even for us as fans and having to talk about it, it's one less thing to talk about. It's one less piece of negativity to talk about until the summer.
There is, Sean, you and I both remarked, I think, on review one way or the other, whilst there wasn't the creativity we like against Brighton, the sense that they might have felt for 70 minutes, they'd had a good week. They'd had a good week all working together. He had the energy of someone who maybe feels like he's had another good week. He's got another 9 days after this one as well, is one of the things that's in my mind here. The Fabinho stuff in that context, I think, is quite striking. It feels to me like it's quite the call to action that I've never really heard him make for any player in quite that way. Now, it's put on his toes a little bit, don't get me wrong, but he goes out of his way to labour the point, as Siobhan says. I think he'll have a really good sense of who is or isn't working and who is or isn't working well and what he feels as though will work well for him. Off the back of what happened against Brighton, yes, But also, I think off the back of the fact that he has now just had a pretty intense 2 weeks with them, the other side of the Wolves replay, where I think he'll have known what he wants and what he's about.
Yes, I mean, the Fabinho thing, he's obviously comfortable enough to talk about it publicly, isn't he? Because of the conversations not just going on in private, but he's obviously rock solid in terms of the player's mentality, I suspect, being a good one. If you weren't, you just wouldn't comment like that in a press conference. I thought it was really good that the manager seemed in good form. He talks earlier on in the press conference about this is not the time for self-pity. We can all make decisions. And he references, as you've been saying, Neil, you know, he laughs about it in the same way you've been laughing about it, Neil. We're 19 games in, e.g. halfway. How's that happened when you're on the 3rd of February with all this that's been going on? And you can change anything, can't you, with decisions? And Liverpool just need to make the decision today of realising hopefully they're enjoying training and they're still as passionate about putting everything in for Liverpool as they can and just taking it one step at a time. And what's in front of us is Wolves away, which should have no fears. Fabinho, I'm sure they'll reintegrate him at some point. We need to be a bit careful with Batsitic at the moment in terms of overuse, not just in terms of him picking up injuries and stuff, but I think in terms of his development. I'm pleased that Ben Doak's been pulled out of the firing line. You don't want to be stepping players up, certainly young players, unless they've got a very good chance of success. That's why you'd normally bring young players on when you're 2-3-0 up and the pressure's just not there. And if they sink, it doesn't really, you know, cause any ripple effects. And if they swim, all the better for it in that analogy. In terms of Wolves, they're pretty one-dimensional. I think Liverpool will do exactly what they did in the FA Cup tie, in that Wolves look to feed the ball into the middle of the park and then spring the diags on you. And the key to that is shutting down Neves, and particularly I suspect they'll go Neves and Nunes together.
Yeah.
And it's very important, therefore, to cut that at source. And I think what you saw against Brighton last week and a bit against Wolves in the Cup will be what you see this weekend. I don't think it's going to be a barrel of laughs at all, but I think you're going to see Liverpool give their centre-backs the ball. You're going to see Gakpo rattling in and around their centre-mids, almost like Bobby Light. Liverpool going to look to squeeze there and cut them diagonals. And the key thing for Liverpool's back line, without getting too technical, with like a mid-block, is to make sure they're not too high, that the full-backs and centre-backs can just dump easy stuff in behind them. So if Alisson and the back line get the line right, and that's difficult because Matip and Gomez, you know, haven't always shown the ability as a pair to hold a line that is that stronger one. I wonder whether there might be an element of Andy Robertson being a little bit deeper and actually being given the responsibility to organise that possibly. And then I think the role of Gakpo is crucial. And if Liverpool can shut Wolves down in the middle of the park, I think Liverpool will be able to spring on them. And I've never really thought Wolves are very good at set pieces. We should have caused more trouble than we did in the cup game. I'm just not sure Liverpool have got the players to fully take advantage of that. If we're going Konate, Van Dijk, I'd really fancy us to hurt them at set pieces at the weekend.
Just on it, Sean, other question becomes what he does in attack. Nunez back available, seemingly from the outset. Do you think he starts Nunez or do you think he'll stick with Elliot? It's worth saying, Elliot's scored two in the last three. He plays the ball, puts the ball through for Salah as well. At one point, he gets Liverpool's other good opportunity. Where do you think Elliot gets to start this one?
No. I think I wouldn't be surprised at all if he does. But I wouldn't. I'm a huge Harvey Elliott fan, but I think the way we're going to set up means that in the right and left-hand side midfield roles, you're looking for more of an out-and-out midfielder. Also, Keita in the cup game played in between spaces really well. He was really good with and without the ball, but with the ball, he was picking up really good pockets. And I think it's an easy sell to Keita to say, if Wolves set up similar to this, you've lived it, you breathe it, you know exactly what to do. And Liverpool haven't had too many options off the bench that excite you too much. And I just think having an attacking change like Harvey Elliott, irrelevant of the game state, is no bad thing. I would like to see Harvey Elliott. I think Harvey Elliott could play as a midfielder for Liverpool really well, but it depends which type of midfielder you're looking at. If we're looking at, if we're looking at the old school three workhorses in midfield, I never want to see him in that midfield because it's not going to work for him. if Liverpool are looking at something that's maybe a bit more 4-4-2 or the change in them roles a bit, I think there is a role for him in that, but not right now when we're struggling and we're waiting for the cavalry to come back. I think in this little spell, I'd rather see Harvey Elliott coming off the bench and making an impact in the final third. And then when the cavalry comes back and Klopp gets things set up when he wants, if he's still in form, you can drop him in then and maybe even look to rotate when we start fitting all these other games in like Wolves and Chelsea, which no one knows when we're going to play.
Okay. Cam, give me a prediction. I'll just see it going.
2-0 Liverpool.
2-0 Liverpool. Yep. Cam, I can't wait till the next 2-0 up. Genuinely. I'd give
what's that like?
It might not be tomorrow. It might not be
when
tomorrow.
When was the last one?
It was Villa away. We were 2-0 up at Villa. It was Boxing Day. We went 2-0 up.
Yeah.
They got one back. And then it was 3-1. No, but it felt an eternity. It felt an eternity. And there haven't been that many of them. So, yeah, I'd love it. If you're saying to me, and Cam, can it be 2-0 on 55 or something? Is that all right, mate?
This isn't like there's going to be like drama. This is literally just a run of the mill. Like, I want this to be the most boring 3 o'clock ever.
Yeah.
Just one in the first half and then one early second half. Their crowd starts emptying. It's just one of them, literally just get the win.
Hi-ho, Wolverhampton, say hi. Siobhan.
Have the fireworks at the start and that's it.
Yeah, Siobhan, give me a prediction.
Yeah, I agree with Cam. I think it's going to be a low scoring but convincing win.
Oh my God.
I know. Well, what are you meant to say?
You say whatever you want. Say we're going to get
people. No, I do think so. I think that if we don't, it's such a massive fortnight, this, isn't it? Like, it's just so unbelievably pivotal to not only to like where we find ourselves in April or May or whatever, but like just to people can't continue. I think we've got to proper close the door on what the last month or so has been. And this can't be any different than that.
Can't be any different than that. Sean, give me a prediction.
I think if the midfield and Gakpo can shut Wolves down, I think Nunes and Salah, assuming they're fit and play, I think we'll really hurt them and win 3-0.
Okay, Wolverhampton Wanderers 0, Liverpool 3. That involves being 2-0 for a while. It can't happen. You can't get to 3-0 unless you've been 2-0. That's what I'd say. I'm no expert, but that is what I'd say. Excellent stuff indeed. Thank you very much to John Gibbons earlier in the show. Also in there as well, we had the wonderful Emma Sanders from the BBC and we had Lee Pennington too on this one. We've had Cam, we've had Siobhan and we've had Sean. Liverpool need to recharge their batteries almost as much as Siobhan began. Hopefully it'll begin to happen after this game against Wolves this weekend. It has been your tour live. I hope you've enjoyed yourself. I know I have. Can't wait to see Liverpool go 2-0 up.
With the Planet Fitness Black Card, you don't just get a great workout, you get a great perk out. Because your membership is packed with perks. For $1 down and $24.99 a month, you'll get perks like access to any of our 2,400 clean and spacious locations. Bring your friend anytime and both work out with tons of equipment that'll give you that big fitness energy. Relax in the Black Card Spa and more. Work out and perk out with the PF Black Card. Join for just $1 down and $24.99 a month. Join the judgment-free zone today. Deal ends Thursday, August 10th. See Home Club for details.
It's time to get your checking account to zero with free checking from PenFed. That's zero ATM fees, zero balance requirements, and zero time spent waiting for your paycheck to direct deposit because you can receive it up to 2 days early. Open your account with just $25 and see how big zero can be. Apply online today at PenFed.org/free checking. Early direct deposit eligibility may vary between pay periods and timing of payer's funding. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Podcast Network.